Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Recently, Boston received an impressive accolade. Parenting Magazine ranked the city number one on its Best Cities for Families list. In the article, the Parenting Magazine author wrote that Boston benefited from a thrilling hometown baseball team, an incredible institution or set of institutions of higher learning, and a new highway system, among other things.
We can't dispute the university's part, but the last place Red Sox and the Big Dig's multi-billion dollar cost overruns, well, they don't necessarily seem like first place material. But the ranking did get us wondering about the quality of life in Massachusetts for families.
And today, the Anna E. Casey Foundation released its annual Kids Count report, which ranks Massachusetts the number two state in the country for child well-being, just behind New Hampshire. So the picture looks pretty good for families and children in our state.
But behind the numbers and the rankings, there's a more complex story to tell. Joining us today to talk about the Kids Count report and about child welfare in general in the Commonwealth is Noah Berger. He's executive director of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. And welcome back to Radio Boston. Noah, good to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So this report, Massachusetts number two, sounds impressive. Before we dive into some of the details of the report, which are a little more complex than that number two ranking might suggest, what stands out to you in this Kids Count report?
Well, on the positive side, I'd say there are two things that really stand out. One is Massachusetts ranking for education. And it's not that surprising, but on their two major measures of educational quality, which is fourth graders being proficient in reading and eighth graders being proficient in math, Massachusetts led the entire country. That is, our schools outperformed and our children outperformed those in all the other states. And that's not a coincidence. Massachusetts, over a long period of time, has made investments in public education to try to make sure that we have the highest quality schools in the country. And over the long term, that's paid off. We also currently have the best educated workforce in the country. 45% of our workforce has a college degree. That's better than any other state in the country. And that has a lot to do with why we are outperforming the country coming out of this recession. And if you look at overall economic strength, the quality of jobs that we have in Massachusetts and the wages they pay, it's near the very top of the country.
All right, so some good news there in terms of education. What else stands out?
Another positive is healthcare. As we know, Massachusetts led the nation in expanding access to healthcare coverage, and one of the measures in this is the percentage of kids who have access to health insurance, who have health insurance. And again, there, Massachusetts leads the country. But I do want to go back to the question of education. And while it is a good news story that we are leading the nation, we're leading the nation on, for example, fourth grade reading proficiency, with about half of our kids being proficient in reading by fourth grade. That's better than every other state, but it's obviously not good enough. If half of the kids in the state aren't proficient in reading in fourth grade, a lot of research indicates that proficiency in reading by that age is critically important to a child's ability to do well throughout the rest of school and ultimately to be a successful adult. And that means that a lot of kids are at risk of being left behind. And the story that comes out of this data, I think, is not let's celebrate that half of our kids are proficient in reading by fourth grade and we're better than the rest of the country. We should take some pride in that, but it shouldn't slow us down from saying, what would it take to make sure the other half of the kids in the Commonwealth are proficient in reading by fourth grade?
And Noah, it brings to mind, too, I mean, if the fact that half of our fourth graders are not reading at a proficient level in Massachusetts, what does that say about the rest of the country or certainly the other states that are much lower down on this list as well?
Yeah, I think other states are obviously facing even much more difficult challenges in public education, and frankly, not meeting those challenges even to the level that we are. In Massachusetts, in the 90s, we made very significant investments in public education, particularly in lower-income communities. But then in the late 90s, the state cut taxes by about $2.5 billion. And as a result, a lot of that progress stopped. And now we're beginning to see schools that are in some ways underfunded once again. And there is a danger that while we have a vision in Massachusetts of making sure that every kid, regardless of what city or what neighborhood they grow up in, will have access to a really high-quality public school. For too many kids, that's not the case right now. And the challenge really is to figure out what it's going to take to make sure those kids get both reading proficiently by fourth grade, but get a high-quality education in general, being prepared to enter college and do well in college or in a career.
And, Noah, I want to talk a little bit about what it would take, what the state needs to do to sort of make these numbers better, get better results. But first, a little quickly, two more aspects of this, of these rankings. We talked about education, health. There's also, in this report, a look at family and community and economic well-being. Let's talk about economic well-being. Massachusetts ranks number 11. What did you see in there?
Yep. Again, 11 is better than most of the country, but when you look under the numbers at most of the measures, not good enough. So a key measure there is child poverty. How many kids are living in families that are in poverty? Nationally, that number is 1 in 5 children. 20% of all children in the country are living in poverty. Massachusetts, we're doing a little bit better. It's 1 in 7 children are living in poverty. But that's still about 200,000 children in Massachusetts are growing up in poverty. And obviously, that's not something to be proud of. And again, it raises the question, what can we do about that? How can we help those children? And there are some fairly direct things. Many of those children have parents who are low-wage workers. You could raise the minimum wage to increase the incomes of their families. You could provide child care. The state, through this budget crisis, has been forced to cut funding for child care for working parents. You could restore that funding for child care so that the parents of those low-income kids who need to work would be able to work and have somebody to care for their children. That could raise their living standard. But in the long term, it may also come back to education, the question of how we can make sure that those kids living in poverty, that living in poverty doesn't mean that they lose out on the opportunity to learn, that they lose out on the opportunity to go to a really good public school that will prepare them as they become adults to get good jobs that pay good wages and allow them to support their families.
Listeners, we're talking to Noah Berger. He's executive director of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. And we're talking about the annual Kids Count Report, which ranks this year Massachusetts as the second best state in the country for child well-being. But we're hearing about the numbers behind that ranking, which aren't necessarily completely encouraging, even if there's some pride about a number two ranking. You can join the conversation. Do you think Massachusetts is one of the best places in the country to raise a family? What about the city of Boston? Is it a good place to raise children? What makes it great? What makes it difficult? What needs improvement? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And speaking of Facebook, Chris Devers wrote on our question yesterday about whether Massachusetts is indeed the best state or the second best state to raise kids. I'm raising two kids here and wouldn't want to be doing it anywhere else. The public schools are great. There's an endless array of educational extracurricular options. The healthcare options are excellent. And our kids have gotten to know other kids with families from all over the world. That's Chris Devers writing on Facebook. But give us a call and join the conversation. And let me introduce Jerry Mogul. He's executive director of Massachusetts Advocates for Children. He's here in the studio. And Jerry Mogul, great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony. And greetings, Noah.
Hello.
Love your take on it. Number two, again, sounds like a pretty impressive ranking. You've been working in child advocacy for a long time. What should we be paying attention to behind that number two ranking?
Well, I think that both you and Noah are right on the mark to go under the hood and look at the what's underlying the data and to see the side that's not quite as positive as we might think. And you know, to that point, of, especially around education that you brought up, I would say that I fear for the rest of the country that, in fact, we're number one in education. And in fact, I think it's really important to look at Massachusetts and education in a global context, because kids in Massachusetts are going to be not just competing with other kids in North Dakota or South Carolina, but they're going to be competing with kids from Singapore and France and Japan. And so there have been some data studies that have been compiled. And in fact, I think Massachusetts ranks somewhere in the middle when compared to other countries. But the country as a whole is abysmally, in the lower part of the ranking. So this data does, it is the glass half empty, half full kind of a question. And even around access to health care, I mean, the fact that we're ranked number one in that, and it's great, and we should all be very proud of our health insurance system. But, really, I mean, health care is right, and every child should have health insurance. And there shouldn't be any question about that. And the fact that other states, you know, don't have that is appalling. And so, you know, I think that we need to look at both the absolute standard as well as relative rankings when we do look at this.
And what about other issues? You know, I mean, for instance, when you look at a ranking, well, actually, let me just read this email that we got from Charlotte Kahn at the Boston Foundation. She heads the Boston Indicators Project. She talks about this. She says it this way. Comparatively, we're a white, wealthy, and highly educated state, so we tend to do well on comparative rankings of this kind. But beneath the headlines lie deep disparities by race, ethnicity, and geography that we must understand in order to plan for the future. And as a case in point, she points to Boston's Roxbury-Dorchester-Mattapan corridor, where more than 40% of children live in households at or below the federal poverty threshold in one of the nation's most expensive cities. So, Noah Berger, let me come back to you on that point in terms of this Kids Count report. What does it say about racial disparities in the state of Massachusetts and socioeconomic disparities?
Yes, I think both what Jerry was saying and what Charlotte Kahn said is absolutely right. There are enormous divisions, and the fact that we are doing better than many other states, while perhaps an inspiration that we can succeed, doesn't mean that we have succeeded. And I think that as long as you have the kinds of statistics that we've seen, where 1 in 7 children are in poverty, there are enormous disparities. That's going to hold us back. And I mentioned that 45% of our workforce has a college degree at this point. Well, that means more than half doesn't. And particularly as we look to the future, as we look to what it would take to build a really strong economy 10 years, 20 years from now, think about what the differences in our state economy would be if instead of 45% of our population with a college degree, it was 55 or 65 or 70. That would obviously be hugely important for those kids if we make the investments that allow them to, you know, live up to their potential. But it would also be great for our state economy. It would allow us to live in a much more prosperous state, be the kind of place where employers, frankly, from around the world would want to be locating their jobs that require well-educated workers. So addressing those disparities and making sure that every kid, regardless of what neighborhood or city they grow up in, has those opportunities. And frankly, it's not just education. For a kid to thrive, they need to be healthy. They need access to good nutrition. They need a safe neighborhood. So there are a lot of types of investments that we can make in improving the lives for children in Massachusetts that will of course help those kids, but ultimately they'll help all of us. They'll make us a much stronger state.
We're talking about the annual Kids Count report, which ranks Massachusetts as the number 2 state in the country for child well-being. Jerry Mogul, Executive Director of Massachusetts Advocates for Children, and Noah Berger, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center, are here. You can join the conversation, 800-423-8255. Let's take a call. Let's go to Elizabeth, who's calling from Dorchester. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm calling to make a comment about the statistics that you're putting out about fourth grade reading proficiency. And while it's true that, you know, more than 50% of the kids are proficient and close to the other half is not, it doesn't mean that they're not readers. They could certainly be 2 points away from being proficient, or they could have learning disabilities and be struggling to read. So I felt like the way you presented that statistic made it sound like the kids are not reading.
Okay, Elizabeth, I appreciate the point. Jerry Mogul, let me come over to you. Do you want to comment on Elizabeth's condition?
Sure.
Comment about that?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point, Elizabeth. And, you know, we're dealing with data here that's very, what's the opposite of granular? It's really at a high level. And, you know, one of my concerns about the Casey report is that the data indicators are just so broad sometimes and don't really get at the richness of the kinds of nuances that you're talking about, that for advocates, the data really doesn't help that much. It doesn't really get at what some of the issues are facing kids. We have to do a much, you know, deeper dive. We have to really drill down into that data, to really have this data be useful for us. Now, fortunately, the Casey report this year comes with on its website access, and I commend Noah and his agency for this, for a tremendous amount of data that is available that helps get at some of the details, so that you could find out, in fact, you know, how many kids in the fourth grade are failing versus are at the number two level, they're not quite proficient, but you could find that kind of information out. But if you're just dealing with these kind of 16 indicators, I mean, they're good conversation starters, but they're really not going to help you develop policies or develop programs to address the issue by themselves.
Well, Jerry, what other factors should we look at if we want to get a good, if we want to get a sharper, a clearer picture of what kids in Massachusetts are facing? What's missing in terms of gathering this data and putting together this picture?
Well, to some extent, the data is not necessarily available at this level. I mean, I was reading the introduction to the Casey report, and the narrative actually is more nuanced than the indicators are. And in some respects, that their narrative is kind of going beyond what they're able to do with the indicators, because they're trying to do these indicators that cut across all 50 states, so the data has to be available at a certain level. I mean, they mentioned childhood obesity, for example. They mentioned child maltreatment. These are critical issues facing us today, but that data is just not available across states. Now, I'm hoping that with NOAA's agency, that we can work together with various stakeholders to really kind of get good Massachusetts data that can help us to develop the policies to address those kinds of issues that people are really talking about and thinking about, as opposed to these indicators that are superimposed on us because they happen to be available.
What do you think of that, Noah? Can we go deeper in terms of expanding the kinds of data we get and the kinds of questions, I guess, that we ask?
Yes, absolutely, and we need to. I think the national report is very much focused on, frankly, beginning a conversation, and we know it's not all the data we need to have that conversation intelligently. It does begin to get us thinking about where we're strong, where we're weak, and even when we're strong, who's being left behind. But Jerry's absolutely right. You need a lot more information than that. Frankly, we need both data and more qualitative analysis also of what's going on. As Jerry mentioned, on our website, the Mass Budget website, which is massbudget.org, we have a lot more of the local data. If people want to go to it, you can click on the Kids Count button on the top of our website, and it brings you to a data center that has, for example, in education, we have a lot more grade-by-grade, school-by-school in each of the levels of proficiency, in different levels of proficiency. So I think that's right, that we do need more data analysis. And the other thing is, I think this is a conversation that everybody has to be part of. It's addressing the needs of kids in Massachusetts and America, obviously, is sort of one of the foremost challenges that we face. And having national data helps in that process, but it's a small piece of what needs to be done overall. Local data also helps, but ultimately the issue is who's going to be working with that data, using data and organizing and their own analysis to try to move forward policies that will make life better for children.
There's some interesting facts here. Among the top five states in this Kids Count report, New Hampshire number one, Massachusetts number two, Vermont number three, New Jersey four, Minnesota five. I'm struck by the fact that three New England states are on the top. Noah or Jerry, let me come to you. Any significance there that three out of the five top five are New England states?
Well, other than a certain amount of regional pride and in terms of, although it's hard to make generalizations because New Hampshire in some ways is very different in terms of the role of government. But I think that, Charlotte has a point, and I do want to do a shout out to Charlotte. Charlotte Kahn, who you quoted earlier, her work on the Boston Indicators Project has just been extraordinarily thoughtful. But, look at New Hampshire and Vermont and Massachusetts. They are mostly very, very white states in terms of racial indicators. And I think that might have something to do with it. I'm not sure. You mentioned Minnesota and New Jersey might be different. But there are a lot of different factors. It's hard to generalize and look at that. But certainly Massachusetts, I think we have a combination of strong government support, the kind of issues that Noah was talking earlier about, the kinds of commitments that we have made as a state government and as a people, I think clearly have made a difference for us.
Mm. Racial pattern. Yeah, go ahead, Noah.
I was just going to say, I think the data to some degree reflect government policies, and to some degree they reflect demographics. I mean, it is a reality that if you're looking at child well-being, a lot of the measures are going to look worse in very poor, low-income states, and they're going to look better in wealthy states. But layered over that is also some states make a much stronger commitment to investing in kids. So I actually think if people want to look at the data more carefully, to some degree it makes a certain amount of sense to compare Massachusetts to the other high-income states and see how we compare in those ways. But I do think it's important for the overall data to include that demographic piece, because we shouldn't ignore the fact that poverty is a huge part of the problem, and that states with high levels of poverty are obviously going to score lower on many measures of child well-being. And that's very much a national challenge of what we can do as a nation to try to lift up kids all over the country.
Can I just jump in on
please
that?
Please do, John.
Yeah, just, and Noah may know this as well. I mean, in terms of income inequality, Massachusetts actually ranks pretty high in the wrong sense in terms of having a great deal of income inequality compared to other states. So, things are not necessarily great for us when you look at it from a different perspective.
You know, looking at these numbers about economic well-being, children whose parents lack secure employment, 30%. That's pretty high, isn't it, Noah?
Yes, that is high. It's high all over the country, and that's obviously partly a result of the economic crisis that we're in now. But when 3 in 10 kids are growing up in a family where, you know, parents very often want to be working full-time and are working part-time or laid off for part of the year, that's a huge economic challenge. One other thing I wanted to say on the question of the national rankings is one way in which I find this a valuable exercise is we also often see other types of rankings. Things that call themselves like business tax climate rankings, where they'll claim that some of the lowest income southern states are the best states for business because they're low tax states or they have cheap labor. And I think this is a sort of good reminder that ultimately the goal of economic policy is to make life better for the people of the state. And the children are a sort of good way of looking at quality of life in a state. So those states that are often told we need policies that are more like Texas or Alabama because they're, you know, a business ranking that says those are good states. Well, what those end up being is states with, you know, where the quality of life is not good, where the policies being pursued are not actually raising living standards. And what we're doing, frankly, in some of the northeastern states is a different sort of economic policies of trying to invest in people, increase their skills, and try to have, you know, people do the high value added jobs that can pay good wages. And it's a different path of economic development. And if you look at it from the perspective of what ends up making life better for people, I think the path that we're on, although there's a huge amount of progress to be made to lift up many of the people who are being left behind, we are doing better than a lot of other states.
Gretchen Bostrom tweets at Radio Boston, "If I were to have kids one day, I'd consider raising kids in Boston, but the education system needs help, as do prices on places to live in the city." That's Gretchen Bostrom who tweeted at Radio Boston. Let's take another call. Chris is calling from Medford. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm one of the ones in Massachusetts that have been lost. I've got dyslexia, and I'm not allowed to work in Massachusetts with dyslexia. I went down to take the licensing test for being a contractor, and they don't accommodate for the ADA. I'm not allowed extra time to physically take the test, and so in the state of Massachusetts, I'm basically a nobody. I can't get a good job. I can only get the lower paying, the lower quality jobs. And in the state of Massachusetts, it's the only state that I was never able to get my contracting license.
Well, Chris, we're sorry to hear that. Thanks for the call. And Jerry Mogul, let me ask you, any ideas for what Chris is talking about there?
Well, I hadn't heard that before, but certainly it sounds like some level of discrimination. You may want to pursue with the Federal Office of Civil Rights or perhaps with some state agency that could help you with that, but I wouldn't let that go unattended.
Chris, thanks for that call. Jerry, what is the sort of ultimately the sort of value of these kinds of surveys? We talked about initiating a conversation. We seem to have done that. Is that it, or is there some deeper value in this?
Well, frankly, in terms of these, the kind of 16 indicator thing, there's not much more from our perspective. I mean, in the past, I can't say that the Casey Kids Count report was something that we anticipated coming out. It really was, you know, not met by the advocacy community with, you know, with great import. We tend to get data very richly from our own intake. We hear directly from people, and from that, just for an example, in 2002, we started getting phone calls from parents of kids with autism. This is before it became very public. And we, from that, we designed and developed a program for parents of kids with autism. And look what's happened, 10 years later. Similarly, we started getting calls from families where there was family violence in the home. And we, from that, we identified trauma as a critical issue facing families. Mm. So there's kind of a bottom-up and top-down approach to this. And you've got to be able to look at all the data that's out there. And as I said, I'm hoping that working with NOAA, we can make it better here in Massachusetts to use that resource, that wonderful resource that we have, to tie it in with our local ground-up data.
Jerry Mogul, Executive Director of Massachusetts Advocates for Children, thanks so much for coming in today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And it sounds like, NOAA, that this is at least the beginning of an important conversation. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been great.
That's NOAA Berger, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Stay with us. Coming up, it's Olympics time in London, and Only a Game's Bill Littlefield brings us a preview. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.